We'll cover a few verses, starting with text 27, Canto 3, chapter 26, 27, 28, 29, and 30. Sankhya philosophy isn't easy, but it's important. Here's some of the ways that it's important. It's important to understand how sambandhagyan, the relationship of all things with the source of emanation of those things. The absence of sambandhagyan is modern life, mechanistic science that doesn't value or doesn't appreciate, doesn't recognize there's a source of everything. And when there isn't a source of everything, then proprietorship becomes an issue. With that, you have politics based on ideologies of proprietorship. The democratic view says one thing, and the communist view says another thing, the socialist view says another thing, and then there's varieties amongst those, and centered around proprietorship, and the issue of proprietorship is resolved by understanding the absolute proprietorship. There's a relationship of all things with their source of emanation. And also on that basis, it justifies our using things like the microphone or our senses or our mind in service to the source of those things, and spiritualizing things of this world by connecting them with the source of emanation. The bhakti principle, another, has as basis or foundation sambandhagyan. Well, it was my last time spent in Chicago, I gave 4 or 5 classes just on this one topic, not from Sankhya philosophy, but sambandhagyan is the basis of bhakti. If you don't have proper sambandhagyan, we may have a sentiment, and the sentiment without proper foundation is misplaced, or is likely to be, almost certain to be misplaced, and then one can go very enthusiastically in the wrong direction. Religious enthusiasm becoming fanaticism, becoming oppressive, and sectarianism, and so many things. Not reaching the goal, ultimately, in any case. So, proper sambandhagyan is necessary for movement in bhakti. Another is, as I was mentioning it briefly this morning, but as in the bigger circles of time with creation, there's the smaller circles of every moment of our life, or our life, or human civilization, or, you know, however big or small you want to make the circle, the same principles apply. And if one can understand the big, one can understand on the medium, one can understand on the tiny, one can understand literally moment to moment why things happen the way they happen. It's a spiritual science. The foundation of that spiritual science is knowledge of Krishna. And Krishna includes all things because everything comes from Him. So this is just part of understanding Krishna. Another reason is, there's so many reasons, but another reason is surrounding us in all directions is the material energy. And if we don't have a proper understanding of that material energy, how are we going to grasp that which is beyond the material energy? We'll be entangled in the material energy and be disconnected as a result from Krishna. And so many other reasons why it's important. So we'll just continue with the repeating. It's not easy, but it's important. And things that are not easy but important, one recommendation that Prabhupada gave was specific to nectar devotion. And Prabhupada said, if you don't understand, read it again. And if you don't understand after reading again, then read it again. And by continually hearing spiritual subject matters, purification is taking place in any case, and gradually, through purification, one can understand. Prabhupada said a similar thing about Bhaktisiddhanta. It was difficult to understand. Prabhupada said it was difficult to understand Bhaktisiddhanta. And even he was speaking in Bengali. And that's his native tongue and my native tongue, and he was explaining things in Bengali. And it puzzled my brain, Prabhupada's words. But I continued to listen. And by continuing to listen, that was my main qualification. So now today I can speak because I sat and listened. So if your brain is puzzled a little bit, no problem. Welcome to the club. And continue to listen. Continue to receive the message, not just with your, you know, academic intellect, but with spiritual aspiration to understand Krishna, the proprietor of all things. How wonderful is our Krishna? Like that. And that's where the Sankhya teaching that Kapila is giving to Devahuti leads anyways. It leads to bhakti. He's not training Devahuti to become a big scholar. He's training Devahuti to become completely attached to the personality of Godhead with zero bewilderment. So that can be our aspiration also. So in chapter 26, Fundamental Principles of Material Nature, there is this nice complex description of the unfolding of creation. Pradhan, the glance of Mahavishnu, living entities in time being injected into that Pradhan, being agitated, and then the elements beginning to differentiate out from their undifferentiated state. By the way, from your question this morning, I was thinking, Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj describes it like this, making a soup. There's some water, there's some salt, there's some spices, there's some cauliflower, there's some potato, there's some carrots and some other vegetables. You turn on the flame, the ingredients are placed in the water, and they boil. It depends on how long you boil and what spices you put in and so many other things. But supposing you want to make like broth, just boil and 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 boil. And at some point, you can't distinguish, there's the potato and there's the cauliflower and it says soup. That's pradhan. Everything's there, but undifferentiated. And mahatattva is then reversing the process. Back to there's the cauliflower, there's the potato. And then they begin by the arrangement of the Supreme Lord, the elements begin to mix to create forms of life, gross and subtle. So this is describing the differentiation of the primordial soup, so to speak, or the pradhan. So that, and when it's completed, it's the mahatattva, and these are the stages of the separation of the elements. So the first element that separates is ahankar, and then mentioned were the three modes of material nature. They're also there in a dormant state in pradhan. They become activated or agitated, and they then mahatattva, excuse me, false ego begins interacting with them. And we heard this morning about these three phases, or two sets of three, actually. The doer, the instrument, and the effect. The doer, the instrument, and the effect. Controlling demigods, the senses, and the object of the senses. These are all influenced by and pre-existed by false ego. So before these other differentiations or from the undifferentiated state, before the elements separate out, there's the potential of them there, and false ego in the modes of nature. And to make it a little more complicated, there's a presiding deity over the whole thing. There's the Chaturvyuha, Vasudeva, Sankarsan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. And each one of those four presides over some portion of the creation. Now, ultimately, Krishna is the source of everything. But he expands, and they're the presiding deities over different aspects of creation. And to make it a little more complicated, the cause is understood to be present within the effect, although the cause and effect are different. Like the example from the morning. The painter and his painting. The architect and his architecture. The cook and the meal. Within the effect, so sometimes the effect is described as not different than the cause, because there is an aspect of non-difference. While Gaudiya Vaishnava or Vaishnavas, students of Bhagavad Gita in Bhagavatam, should understand there is both oneness and difference, while emphasizing the oneness, don't forget or don't discount the difference. But so there are places where we read one of them already. The effect is identified by the name of the cause. And that's false ego itself. We read in text 25 this morning. False ego is known by the name of Sankarsan, with a capital S, because Sankarsan is the cause. He's the Lord of false ego. We read some passages about that. He's the cause, there's the effect. Sometimes the effect is called in the name of the cause, Sankarsan. So to connect the mind, connect the sense of identity in its pure state, so it's no longer false ego but true ego, one worships the Supreme Lord, and then one can understand one's factual identity as an eternal servant of the Supreme. In short, all of that can be accomplished, just worship Krishna, just chant Krishna. Harer Naam Eva Kevalam. That's simple. And then, you know, complex and complex and complex. So the machinery of the material energy is very complex. And there are lots of pushes and pulls, lots of levers and gears, and, you know, there's a lot of spiritual technology involved in how the material creation goes on from its inception and continuing throughout. Just a little side comment. There was a period of time in Europe when the Catholic Church was very prominent. And there was, during that period of time, very prominent Catholic priests started to, it became popular that in order to help people appreciate God, we as priests should help them to see how there's the presence of God in all things. Their intention was theistic, but they embarked on something that ended up in atheistic science. That was, you know, an intention with unexpected consequences. So what they would do is they would study, because they were brahmanas or intellectual priests, they studied material nature and tried to see how material nature worked, and to show that you had to factor in God to explain how material nature works. That was their intention. And during this period of time, simultaneously over here, there was a strong fascination with clocks, especially in Germany and Switzerland, like Swiss watches and Swiss clocks and German clockmakers. So side by side with what was going all over here with the fascination with clocks, there was this other thing going on over here in theology. And there was a marrying of the two, where some theologians proposed God is like the big watchmaker. And he makes, just like a watchmaker makes, and he sells the watch, and he doesn't have any further interaction in the watch, because he just made it, and then somebody uses it. And that was a theological explanation or justification of why bad things happen. It's not God's fault, he just made the watch. He made the creation. And then these terminologies came up where it was deology and theology, and I forget which is which. But one is where God has an ongoing presence, and another is where God is like the watchmaker who makes the watch. It doesn't have anything to do with it thereafter. It has to do with samband again, a relationship between God, the source of things, and the things. And then, you know, as Kali Yuga moved on, the purpose of God as the watchmaker disappeared, and just how the watch works, and the push and pull, the cause and effect of material events, and then mechanistic science evolved, where intellectuals were very, 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 very happy, busy, researching how to make products. They could then, by doing the research, they could make products that could then be sold in the commercial market, and with machinery they could make lots and lots of them, and they would make money and get a reputation and recognition. The people would have more things, more products. And industrialization was rocket fueled by mechanistic science and research, and God disappeared. These, you know, as far as they're concerned. Because you can explain all things without bringing God into the picture, as far as they were concerned. here's a an alternative explanation of the push and pull, has behind the push and pull controlling demigods, a presiding Lord, and then the Lord of all Lords, the cause of all causes. That's the Sankhya picture. So before the whole show began, the first element that separates out is false ego, with the capacity to do, the instruments with which to do, and the objects to do it upon, coming from false ego. So now we're going to get the breakdown of starting with false ego in goodness. Okay, so that's text 27. Translation from the false ego of goodness. Another transformation takes place. From this evolves the mind, whose thoughts and reflections give rise to desire. So this desire is already there. It's just dormant within the living entity that's in its susupti or dormant state of consciousness. But so upon awakening, or when consciousness begins to awaken, interacting with pradhan or interacting with mahatattva, the mind arises by the mode of goodness interacting with false ego. Well, here's a few things. Two of them mentioned here. One is that there's a function of the mind, sankalpa vikalpa, accepting, rejecting, proposing, and then changing that proposal and modifying it. And so the mind goes on endlessly restless, chanchala. But it's a necessary function in order to have events, in order to have life. Not even just life as we know it, but life in other species, they also have mind, where they're accepting and rejecting. Thoughts and reflections. So give rise to desire. It's like same as Bhagavad Gita, when contemplating the objects of the senses. Where's the seat of contemplation? It's not the senses observing sense objects, it's the mind. How you feel towards that. I'll share with you commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. It's really nice. The first, let's say, there's the sound of a bird outside. And before you recognize it's the sound of a bird, there is sound. And there's some auditory receiver of the sound, and it goes to the mind. And then the mind analyzes. And either you like it, you don't like it. But there's the contemplation on something before you even have a feeling about that something. And then after contemplation on that something, you either like it or you don't like it. You have a feeling. So it's one of the functions of the mind. Thinking and then reflecting or feeling. And then willing, thinking, feeling, willing, functions of the mind. Prabhupada's purport, the symptoms of the mind are determination and rejection, and sankalpa vikalpa. We know this from nectar devotion, accepting. So with surrender, there's accepting and rejecting. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. Yes? familiar with that? Accepting those things favorable to devotional service, rejecting those things unfavorable to devotional service. The first thing is the mind. Savai mana Krishna padara vindayo, the verse from Prabhupada loved to quote. Ambarish Maharaj, who was a Vaikuntha qualified pure devotee, he began his practice daily and regularly with fixing his mind. So it's difficult for us to fix our mind because we're undisciplined and we're ruled by the modes of nature and so forth. So part of the discipline for the mind, for us, is our japa every day. And we know what a interesting spectacle that is, chanting japa every day. But part of the purpose of that is disciplining the mind, bringing the mind to Krishna, so that the mind will become cheto, darpana, marjanam, cleansing the mirror of the mind of all dirty things accumulated for years and years and years and lifetimes. So our discipline is the initially discipline of purification, whether our mind is restless or not. Purification. These understandings are refined Kapila Dev incarnation of the Supreme Lord explanation of what goes on in the material contamination side and then conversely in the purification side. So the material influences diminish in the purification process when we apply a purification process in our life. If that's not there, the unlimited living entities become covered in sequence. Influences of desire that come from the influence of the mind, determination and rejection. I shall do this. I want to. Here's my plan for the weekend or the year or whatever it's, you know, this afternoon or whatever it is. And we make it, so the mind contemplates and we make a plan, and as we're making the plan, even as we're making the plan, there's refinements of the plan. It's never steady. Unless we're fixed in Krishna consciousness ultimately. Oh, at least that's the ultimate plan is pleasing Krishna. And then it's Krishna's plan. And then Krishna can change it if he likes to change it. And that's just fine. What keeps one fixed is the disposition of service. We have a plan of service. And something happens. I planned to come here, have a nice peaceful visit. I left my glasses in the airplane. So now it's disturbed, and disturbing others because of that lapse. So if we stay in the mood of service, then man proposes, God disposes, let's see what Krishna arranges. But if that purpose of serving Krishna is gone, then it's just determination and rejection of that plan. And then arise different types of desires. Prabhupada continues, we desire that which is favorable to our sense gratification. And we reject that which is not favorable to sense gratification. The material mind is not fixed. But the very same mind can be fixed when engaged in the activities of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, as long as the mind is on the material platform, it is hovering. And all this rejection and acceptance is asat or temporary. It is stated that he whose mind is not fixed in Krishna consciousness must hover between acceptance and rejection. however advanced a man is in academic qualification, as long as he is not fixed in Krishna consciousness, he will simply accept and reject and will never be able to fix his mind on a particular subject matter. So that's the mind, the unsteadiness, contemplations, or thoughts followed by feelings, thinking, feeling, making a plan. Circumstances change, the plan has to change, we feel frustrated, and all that sits from the very beginning of creation. Then the next verse speaks of Aniruddha, the Lord of the mind. So he's the Lord of the mind, and then there's language that says he's the mind, because cause and effect. Text 28, the mind of the living entity is known by the name of Lord Aniruddha, the supreme ruler of the senses, starting with the mind. He possesses a bluish-black form resembling a lotus flower growing in the autumn. He is found slowly by the yogis. That's the verse. So the yogis are searching for the Lord of their meditation, the Lord of their contemplations, the Lord of the mind. And sometimes they may see him in trance of meditation. Purport. The system of yoga entails controlling the mind, and the Lord of the mind is Aniruddha. It is stated that Aniruddha is four-handed with Sudarshana Chakra, Conchal Club, and Lotus Flower. There are 24 forms of Vishnu, each differently named. Among these 24 forms, four of them, Sankarshan, Aniruddha, Pradyumna, and Vasudeva, are depicted very nicely in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where it is stated that Aniruddha is worshipped by the yogis. Now, it's not bhakti yoga, necessarily. Commonly, it's not bhakti yoga. So their worship is more commonly impersonal. But through association of devotees, it may become personal. Certainly with association of Kapila Dev, it becomes personal. So the realization is different according to bhakti, presence or absence of, or the degree of, commensurate to the degree of bhakti, there is a realization. Meditation upon voidness is a modern invention of the fertile brain of some speculator. Actually, the process of yoga meditation, as described in this verse, should be fixed upon the form of Aniruddha. By meditating on Aniruddha, one can become free from the agitation of acceptance and rejection. That means the material aspect of the mind, accepting, rejecting, can be dissolved, because there's only one thing, accepting. In worship or in devotion or linking with the Supreme. When one's mind is fixed upon Aniruddha, one gradually becomes God-realized. He approaches the pure status of Krishna consciousness, which is the ultimate goal of yoga. Now going back some verses, Kapila Dev said, and Prabhupada in his purport said, consciousness is originally pure. The living entity is originally pure. Like rain that's coming down from the clouds. It's pure. It's distilled water. When it hits the earth, it gets muddied. Our tap water in Mayapur was always discolored. And part is coming from the ground and so many things. Directly, because the water table is very high. But water in its pure state is pure. So in contact with material influences becomes contaminated. So the yoga process is to decontaminate by bringing the consciousness of the living entity in contact with the supreme pure. in the case of the mind meditating upon Aniruddha or Krishna, then pure consciousness can be restored. False ego is slackened. Tendency for acceptance and rejection on the basis of sense gratification subsides. At least the potential is there. The potency is there. Two more. That was the mode of goodness. Interacting with false ego produces material mind. Now, false ego interacting with the mode of passion produces the material intelligence. Now, this is a common question. People ask, wait a minute. How come the mind is produced first from goodness and then intelligence is produced second from passion? It seems like it should be the other way around. Like, intelligence is better and mind is not as good as the intelligence. Let's hear what... I'll answer that question, but let's hear what Prabhupada says. By transformation of the false ego in passion, intelligence takes birth, O virtuous lady. The functions of intelligence are to help in ascertaining the nature of objects. Like, there's a notebook on the floor, but I may not know what a notebook is. I may not know lots of things. So intelligence is to grasp or ascertain the nature of things. Okay, it's not something else, it's a notebook. And notebooks can be used for different things, and this notebook is used for this purpose. So the utility of an object can also help shape our understanding of the object. A pot or a plate in one place may be valued in a certain way, in another place be valued in a different way according to culture and circumstances. We have our prejudices. We have our acculturation tendencies just by how we were brought up and our previous sangskaras and so many the teachings and the teachers and our families that we've grown up in, and so many things influence how we perceive or ascertain the nature of things. We have different qualities of intelligence. But that's what the intelligence does. It ascertains the nature of things. And it gives help to the senses. So, you know, the writing instrument next to the notebook is the pen. And by certain training, then we use the pen with the notebook to listen to class and take notes. That's one way. Another is like, I'm really bored, so I just make cartoons or draw things. So the utility can be different according to so many other factors. But the intelligence gives help to the senses. Purport. Intelligence is the discriminating power to understand an object, and it helps the senses make choices. Therefore, intelligence is supposed to be the master of the senses. The perfection of intelligence is attained when one becomes fixed in his activities of Krishna consciousness. Buddhi yoga. Dadami buddhi yogam tam. Yenamam upiyantite. Fixed in Krishna consciousness. Perfection of intelligence. By the proper use of intelligence, one's consciousness is expanded, and the ultimate expansion of a consciousness is Krishna consciousness. Purport. But people value intelligence. Universities all over the place. Because people value intelligence. And purportedly, intelligence expands capabilities, but here it expands consciousness. And the ultimate of that is expansion into the stage of Krishna consciousness. One more, text 30. This is a very interesting, deep, you have to read it 20 times and you still don't get it all, kind of a purport. Doubt, these are the features of, or characteristics of intelligence, material intelligence. Doubt, misapprehension, correct apprehension, memory, and sleep, as determined by their different functions, are said to be the distinct characteristics of intelligence. Interesting list. Especially misapprehension and sleep and doubt. I think those sound like negative things. How is that intelligence? Prabhupada explains. Doubt is one of the important functions of intelligence. Semicolon. Blind acceptance of something does not give evidence of intelligence. Therefore, the word sangshaya is very important. In order to cultivate intelligence, one should be doubtful in the beginning. But doubting is not very favorable when information is received from the proper source. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that doubting the words of the authority is the cause of destruction. But take Arjuna's example as an example of doubting. Because Arjuna is taking the position of one of us. When Krishna says, stand and fight, and he wants to leave the battlefield, he has a doubt. His doubt is his own, based upon his own presupposition or prejudice or attachment. But rather than just blindly saying yes or blindly saying no, Arjuna expresses his doubt. Well, sometimes you say this and some other times you say that, and they sound contradictory, so please explain. That's a sign of intelligence. However, Prabhupada immediately says, when the proper understanding is given, if one still doubts, that's not a sign of intelligence. There are some persons that forever they doubt and doubt and doubt and doubt and doubt. And that means they're on the accepting, rejecting platform of the mind, and their intelligence is not being activated. Because intelligence, when it's activated, initially there's some doubt or misapprehension, and then when the doubt is cleared by proper understanding and information, oh, now Arjuna says, I'm ready. I'm a soul surrender unto you. I'll do as you wish. And that can be, how does that play out in our case? Maybe in our own lives, or at least within the lives of others that we've interacted, maybe in the workplace, maybe in the devotee realm or something. Someone is the blind follower and the blind doubter, just rejecting and rejecting, and they never accept. Because they don't really want to know, nor they have so much capacity, they like to argue. If you say this, they say that. You say that, they say this. They just like to argue. There's some people like that. So then they'll never be happy. They'll never be steady. Their intelligence is absent. The disposition of doubting is misapplied. We don't mind. If somebody comes forward and they have another point of view than our point of view, that's fine. when it doesn't make us unhappy or uncomfortable, we're happy. And then we share understandings. What's your understanding? Here's the Vedic understanding. And once hearing the Vedic understanding, then that person becomes accepting. It's not a good sign if they continue arguing and arguing. I'll just share this to help keep you awake. Prabhupada story. Radha Govinda Maharaj. Yadubar played this for us from part of his following Srila Prabhupada DVD series. When Prabhupada was in somewhere, Bhubaneswar maybe, South India somewhere, there was a function, and Radha Govinda described, he was passing through, someone gave him a book of Prabhupada, he read the book, he liked it very much. So he heard that Prabhupada was going to be attending a function somewhere. And so he went to that, the next place where that function was, I forget. And from reading the book, he became very impressed by the message that he had read. So he wanted to meet the person who wrote the book. He wanted to meet Prabhupada. So he went into an assembly where there were a number of devotees, and he approached one person and said, I'd like to find Bhaktivedanta Swami. Do you know where I can find him? And it was Prabhupada. So he didn't know what he looked like or anything. He said, why would you like to find him? He said, because he is my guru. He said, how do you know that he is your guru? Because I've read his writings. And he is a follower of Lord Chaitanya. And his devotion toward Lord Chaitanya is so great. I accept him as my guru. So then Prabhupada said, what is your understanding of who is Lord Chaitanya? And Radha Govinda said, he's Krishna himself. And Prabhupada replied, how do you know that? He's a sannyasi. He's a saintly person, not a personality of Godhead. And Radha Govinda said, no, he's the personality of Godhead. Prabhupada said, how do you know? He said, I read Chaitanya Charitamrita. He's the personality of Godhead on the authority of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then Prabhupada went on saying, that's a wrong understanding. He's not exactly saying it's a wrong understanding. He's a great saint. He's a great sannyasi. And then Radha Govinda said, please stop speaking. I don't want to hear any more of this. Because his faith was very strong. Then he left. He wanted to go find where is Prabhupada. And as he started to leave, some devotees came forward and paid their obeisances before Prabhupada. So then he could understand. That was Prabhupada. And he was playing with him to test his faith. And then Prabhupada got up and went to his room and was laughing and laughing and saying, this young man, he has such faith in Lord Chaitanya. Just from reading Chaitanya Charitamrita and laughing and laughing and understanding how Prabhupada was testing him and how he had done it, he appreciated him all the more. And very soon became Prabhupada's disciple. So misapprehension, correct apprehension, doubting, not forever doubting, but doubting until there's clarification, then when there's clarification, then becoming very fixed in understanding. These are signs of intelligence. Purport. Doubt is one of the important functions of intelligence, semicolon. Blind acceptance of something does not give evidence of intelligence. Therefore, the word sangshaya is very important. What does sangshaya mean? Doubt. In order to cultivate intelligence, one should be doubtful in the beginning. But doubting is not very favorable when information is received from the proper source. I read that already. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that doubting the words of the authority is the cause of destruction. Paragraph. As described in the Patanjali Yoga system, pramana means evidence, viparyaya, vikalpa, nidra, samsrittayaha. By intelligence only can one understand things as they are. By intelligence only can one understand whether or not he is the body. The study to determine whether one's identity is spiritual or material begins in doubt. When one is able to analyze his actual position, the false identification with the body is detected. This is viparyasa. Doubt leads to seeing a misunderstanding, and the misunderstanding with correct knowledge is changed to a proper understanding. It's all a function of intelligence, so it's not a bad sign at all that someone is doubting initially. When false identification is detected, then real identification can be understood. Real understanding is described here as nishchayaha, or proved experimental knowledge. This experimental knowledge can be achieved when one has understood this false knowledge. It's like Rabindra Sarup Prabhu gave us class, one-month seminar in Vrindavan on impersonal philosophy of Shankara. So the first thing he did was he taught Shankara's philosophy and showed where the holes are. Because you can't refute something or reject something unless you understand the flaws in that something. And then the rest of the seminar was how Vaishnavism or the personal conception torpedoes or eliminates the acceptance of impersonal philosophy. We have to understand what the thing is first. Sariputta used a similar approach when in his interaction with scientists. Scientists hold this view and explains it. And after explaining it, he says, here's a hole, here's a hole, here's a hole, here's a hole. The bucket has so many holes it doesn't hold water. There's the bucket. So many holes. So here's an alternative bucket. But if somebody is attached to this one, they're not going to hear the alternative. Similarly, Prabhupada did with, you know, materialistic life. Materialistic life has so many flaws. Or Narada did with King Prachinibari. Material life has so many flaws. So to accept spiritual conception of life, one has to see the foolishness and the illusion of material happiness. Last paragraph. Smriti means memory, and svapna means sleep. Sleep is also necessary to keep the intelligence in working order. If there's no sleep, the brain cannot work nicely. In Bhagavad Gita, it is especially mentioned that persons who regulate eating, sleeping, and other necessities of the body in the proper proportion become very successful in the yoga process. These are some of the aspects of the analytical study of intelligence described in both the Patanjali Yoga system and the Sankhya philosophy system of Kapila in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, Smriti, this is indicated in Rupa Goswami's teachings, that sharp memory is a sign of intelligence. So those of us that have weak memories, that ability to discern, to the analytical capacity to discern this from that, and even amongst that, the varieties of that, and so forth, that's a function of intelligence. But then to sustain, to hold that analysis or that conception of things, that requires, that's memory. That gives, in other words, the intelligence gives strength to the mind. So a symptom of an intelligent person is they have good memory. So I could do a review. I'm done with this section. We could go back and say, so what? It's interesting, but so what? Supposing you don't understand all this, can you not go back to Godhead? You can go back to Godhead without understanding all this. Then if that's so, why is it there? The purpose of it is so that we can have a sense of the field of the material energy in which we're moving, forces that are acting upon us even we're not aware of them, not only from the outside but inside, and you know the nature of our conditioned life. It's something like understand what the thing is so you can take its alternative. We can use the faculty of intelligence and mind and senses and sense of ego, the sense of self-identity, in such a way it leads to Krishna, leads to Krishna bhakti and liberation. So Devahuti is a woman. She's not necessarily, she's already characterized herself as not so likely to understand so many detailed philosophical things. Still Kapila Deva is presenting it. It's tools for us, like Devahuti, it's tools to have like a conceptual understanding of how the material energy is working. Sankhya is there in Bhagavad Gita also, not in this detail. Chapter 2, chapter 7, chapter 13, there are Sankhya sections. Here's several chapters, Sankhya section, but far expanded. It gives support to bhakti. It's not the essence of bhakti, but it gives support. And for persons who are doubtful, like those people, there's a lot of those people who are educated and trained in mechanistic, atheistic, mechanistic science, for them, God's a sentiment. And we don't need sentiments, we need knowledge. So it kind of indoctrinated them, just by the educational system itself, towards, directionally towards impersonal atheism, or impersonalism and nihilism. I'll just read a little bit, two little sections from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, and we'll end. In the morning we discussed 25 and 26. Here's 27, 28, 29, 30. Short purports. And actually the translation runs a little bit differently. So text 27, after that, you know, the doership, the instruments, and the elements that are acted upon by the instruments. That was 26. Here's 27. From the transformation of ahankara in sattva appeared the mind. By the mind's general desire for objects, the desire for a particular object and notions concerning it appears. So the soul, here is restated, the soul is there, consciousness has become now awakened from the deep sleep state to the awakened state, and there's a general disposition to enjoy apart from Krishna. So for that to happen, we need something outside of ourselves objects outside of ourselves for enjoyment. Before there's objects, there's the desire for the objects. And then the mind is making its appearance to help refine particular attractions or repulsions for particular objects. It's a faculty needed for material life. Next, in the mind is situated the Lord, known as Aniruddha, master of the senses, having the complexion of a blue lotus, worshipped quietly by the yogis. Text 29. O Devahuti, from the transformation of Ahankara in Rajas, Buddhi, or consciousness directed to manifestation of objects, appeared. It assists the senses. He has an interesting presentation in the purport where there's a distinction between citta and buddhi. Now, they can be used in, they can have different meanings depending upon the use, but his statement here is, to make a distinction from citta, buddhi is described as knowledge, the gyan, that which manifests an object, then he explains. Buddhi shows favor to the senses, colon. Without buddhi, the five senses cannot operate. The sensors are there, but they can't do anything without direction. So buddhi being kind, showing favor to the senses. Buddhi gives special assistance. Here's his example. When I hear a sound, first, it is registered by citta as simply awareness. But buddhi helps one to realize this is a sound, and then it's a particular type, like that example of a bird. And oh, I like the sound, very sweet, sweet, pleasant song of the bird. Or it's, you know, it's a construction thing going on over there, and we're trying to have class, and it's too noisy, or something like that. But before there's discernment of the details of the object, there's awareness. So this is what he's making a distinction between citta, which is awareness, and buddhi, which is specific. And that's distinct from the mind. The mind is, I like it, I don't like it. I accept it, I reject it. It's pleasing, it's displeasing. And then the mind calls upon the intelligence, please take that displeasing thing and get rid of it, or change it so that it's pleasing in the following ways. Turn the volume down or something, close the window, too loud out there. Oh, it's really, let's go to the window and hear the birds singing, or whatever it is. Actions follow, and we're relying upon these energies that we don't even know what they are. We just like live our life like animals. But here this is very refined in describing how different parts of Krishna's energies are making material existence happen. And he explains, it's due to false ego, we just accept it as us. I have awareness, I'm distinguishing what that object is, the object of awareness, a desire, it makes me happy, displeases me, I start doing things, and all of that is through an ahankara, it's one package. It's me. This is how the object becomes manifest to a person. So based on false ego, we have varieties of existence. We have existence, and we have varieties of existence. One person is different than another person, one culture is different than another culture, and so on. And the last one, text 30. The characteristics of buddhi by its various functions are doubt, false knowledge, ascertaining correct knowledge, remembrance, and sleep. And there's just details what each of these terms are. And also makes reference to Patanjali Yoga. So here we are, situated, you know, in our this particular lifetime, of a particular place of birth and age, and, you know, we have a different package. Different intelligence, different minds, different values, different, all kinds of different things. And then there are energies that are shared by each of us, although they're different. And we're practicing Krishna consciousness, where we're trying to understand there's one who is the source of all those things and the source of us, and it's in our best interest that we connect ourselves with that same Krishna. And by connecting ourselves with that same Krishna, it strengthens our relationships with one another. It elevates that capacity for us to have pure relationships, unconvoluted relationships, uncompromised relationships in relation with Krishna. So that can happen on a small scale, it can happen on a, you know, whatever the scale. But that's our project. And the human form of life project is to restore our Krishna consciousness, and while so doing, appreciating all the diversities that are amongst us and in the world, to have their common source. So the primary thing is for living entity to redirect attention to Krishna in pure Krishna consciousness. And this is some understanding of how the machine of the material energy is going on under Krishna's direction and supervision. Hare Krishna. Any discussion? Yes? Yes. What does it mean? Well, what does it mean? What does it mean? What's your what? I'm not sure I understand your question. There's differences of terminology, obviously, because here's one term, and here's another term. But it must go beyond that, otherwise it couldn't be buddhi, couldn't be the same. So, or say the same thing in a different way. Someone may approach, there are many, I mean not so many, but there are many who approach study of Sankhya exclusively from an intellectual, not from a devotional platform. That's gyan, or an intellectual approach. And they like Sankhya philosophy. Impersonalists like Sankhya philosophy. From Sankhya philosophy, Krishna disappears for them. Kapila likes Sankhya because Krishna appears. In that case, it's not, it's where Sankhya and buddhi are the same. So it comes from the touch of association with the devotee, or the Lord himself, or the Lord's devotee. And then one can appreciate, how wonderful is my master. All of this complexity so wonderfully being conducted by him. And here are some of the parts. Then of the same, buddhi and Sankhya. The same as Krishna presenting chapter 2 and chapter 7 and chapter 13. It's not atheistic Sankhya. It's buddhi. Yes, yes. Well, the way of fixing the mind upon Krishna certainly is a goal, And the means, a means of the goal is to understand with one's intelligence the nature of things. As it says, one of the aspects of intelligence is to understand the nature of things. When we understand the nature of things, things have their source of emanation and the source of all things. The nature of things is derived from the source of all things. One can see that, and it appreciates, it brings appreciation for the greatness of Krishna. Say the same thing this way. Prabhupada said, people say God is great, but how great He is, that they do not know. So this is appreciating, this is enhancing our appreciation of how great is God. And not just the sentiment that God creates, but how, what a system. How great is God? It enhances one's appreciation of His greatness, and in that way, one's God consciousness. Anything? You missed the morning class. You were in school? Yeah. Were you in school this morning? Yeah. Are you able to follow all this? It's a little difficult. It's a little difficult, huh? Yeah. Well, desire or commitment to do so is the means to do so. And the desire and the commitment to do so come through association with those that have the desire and the commitment to do so. Association with devotees, elevated devotees, gives one the desire and the conviction and commitment to go further. Complacency, letting go of complacency is another. It's related, but it's another. Shushru shro shradadanasya vasudeva katarachit syan mahatsevaya bra punyatirta nishevanat. You know that verse? Within that verse is another answer. This by regular hearing, even as you described, you know, enthusiasm or desire to go further may come and go, ebb and flow and rise and fall. But just by continuing with faith in the process, and gradually purification, and with that gradually steadiness, and the unsteadiness dissipates. Through that application, regular hearing, with faith, and trying, like Prabhupada said, I repeated or referred to Prabhupada's description, I stayed and listened. Because he had faith. Here's an application of that one. Tamal Krishnamurti said, that when Prabhupada brought a number of devotees first back to India, and they did what he called the World Harinam Party. So devotees from around the world going all over India having big kirtan and pandal programs and Prabhupada speaking. And sometimes, depending upon the audience, he would speak in Hindi. or sometimes less common, in Bengali. And when he would do that, the American or Indian European devotees wanted to leave because they couldn't understand anything. And Prabhupada ordered them, stay. Even if you don't understand the language, it will purify you. So even if you're, it's like, you know, you're not understanding all these things, or same, continue to hear. My appreciation, just sharing something with Bhaktisiddhanta. Not only his language was very high, but the platform from which he spoke was very high. And hearing from him, like studying and reading his writings, it's consistently been my experience, like, you know, from even before I was a devotee until today, so many years later. By reading his writings, I'm not sure I understand everything, but one thing I know for sure is my consciousness is in a higher place. And from that higher place, then the eagerness, you know, to become situated in that higher place, although I don't have the qualification, the eagerness for that becomes strong, or renewed, let's say. So don't do like, you know, the is done in the academic world where you either win or you lose. You succeed or you fail. It's not like that. You succeed or you succeed or you succeed. But in spiritual practice, just by sincere application in principle. And the desire will increase, the understanding will increase, the capacity will increase, because it's a dynamic process. It may not go how you would expect it or want it to go, but it will go. That's faith. Not blind faith, faith in according to the statements of the scripture. And one who has faith, that person can understand, and one who doesn't have faith, but just is depending upon their own prowess to understand things, will never understand. It's a disqualifier. So abandon complacency here regularly with faith. Try to, as Prabhupada would use the phrase, try to understand. And gradually understanding, like the rising of the sun, will come. Isn't it that things that when you first read Bhagavad Gita, and then again read Bhagavad Gita, then so things you understand today are not things that you understood when you first started reading Bhagavad Gita. Like that, same with this. This is the graduate study of messages from Bhagavad Gita. And so it's graduate study, but continue to apply carefully. Anything else? Okay, Hare Krishna, Prabhupada Ki Jai.